Ballet Podcast. Greg Bird is now a Yankee. That is all that we really need to talk about, the Yankees' recent performance, because other than that, it really hasn't been that spectacular. I'm Andrew Burns here with Matt Provenzano and Matt Ferencik. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Fine, other than the Yankee stuff.
Yeah, it does put a bit of a damper on things when, you know, you score, what, 3 runs against the Astros in an entire series? 4.
Or they got that one at the end of the 15-1 game.
That's true. It was the start of the comeback trail, but not quite. They were just really fortunate that Nathan Eovaldi was ridiculous on Monday night, and they managed to scratch out a run again in the bottom of the ninth against Ali Perez.
Should have kept Martin Prado.
Yeah, man. Martin Prado. They're really deprived of that Martin Prado.
And David Phelps.
Oh, yes, David Phelps and his busted shoulder or whatever. Now, that it is good that Eovaldi's looked very solid lately. But it is very disconcerting that the Yankees have now dropped 6, I believe, or 5 of their last 7 games. It's against the Indians and the Astros after sweeping the Twins, which, you know, was just kind of a given. But
not great.
Not great, Bob. It seems like the only person who's hot right now is Carlos Beltran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty crazy how hot he's been. It's been, like, pretty ruthian for the past month or so.
Yeah, and actually, like, his numbers on the season are starting to look... I mean, obviously, he's been red hot since, like, I think roughly the middle of May. But now, like, he's been hot for so long that his season numbers are starting to look a lot more like the Carlos Beltran we were expecting. Like, right now he has a 275, 336, 477 triple slash with a 124 OPS plus. And 2 years ago in St. Louis he had a 127 OPS plus. So that's a lot closer to the Carlos Beltran that we wanted.
Yeah.
Last time we did a podcast, they remarked that it was like over his WRC was over 100, like just over 100. And now it's on, all of a sudden it's like, what is it, 124? Like,
yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous.
I feel like at the beginning of the season, it just felt like he was like really bad for a while, and people already kind of like throw him into the coffin.
Yeah, well, he did look very dead in our defense.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I mean, it could have just been something that going on that we didn't know as fans that the organization knew. Like, he could have been telling them that, hey, this whole injury thing, I'm not fully over it yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'll have to just wait for me to kind of fully heal. Kind of like what Mark Teixeira said about his wrist. It could have kind of been the same thing true with the bone spur that we just don't really know.
Maybe he had worms. At the end of April, he was hitting 162, 216, 265.
Yeah.
And wow.
And since then, he's hitting 302, 365, 529. With an OPS near 900. That's really good. Analysis.
Analysis that should continue for the rest of the season.
Yes.
Like, if only he didn't...
That's a higher OPS than A-Rod has on the season.
If only he didn't play defense, like he was, I don't know, stuck in a chair.
Yeah, he did make that one nice sliding catch the other day. And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, whoa! Didn't you know he had an injury, Carlos?
Except his slides at this point are sort of just looks like he's falling on his knee.
Yeah, they just look very awkward.
Like, he looks like he's really trying to brace himself for a fall.
Yeah. But other than Beltran, lately it's been very, very dark times for the Yankees' offense. Teixeira's bat has gone cold. He's kind of hurt, too, with the bone bruise. A-Rod's in a horrible slump, aside from that grand slam that he hit against the Twins, I think. And when they've been kind of powering the offense the whole season, that's when you don't have them contributing anything at all, it really hurts the rest of the lineup.
Yeah, it pretty much just looks like 2013.
Yeah, it's...
Yep.
It has not been a great time, really.
But at the same time, I think that people, Yankee fans, are just kind of like on the sky is falling train.
Oh,
pretty quickly.
Yeah.
That sounds so unlike
there's still
Yankee
a game
fans.
And a half out of first place. There's still like almost yeah. 5 games up in the wild card. Like, they're not doomed yet. Just yet.
It drives me nuts. It's like, did 2 bad years really give everyone this bad PTSD? Like, seriously, like they were good in 2012 and then 2 years of being terrible and all of a sudden they play like a couple bad beats and it's like everything is terrible and we suck and we're missing the playoffs. It's like, come
on. Fire Cashman.
Yeah.
That has reemerged in the comments.
They were never even like that terrible. I mean, 2013 was bad, but like in terms of just the win total, like it's not like they were the Astros and they had like 3 straight like 90 loss seasons.
Right.
Not even close.
They were just they were just really mediocre and boring.
I mean, I guess that's sort of the price you pay for being the successful, being as successful as they have been. But still, things could be a lot worse.
Oh yeah, I mean, look at Boston. Like, right now, they do have a terrific farm system, but they're going to head toward their second straight last place season. They're going through a regime change, and their big contract left fielder can't play left field, and their big pitching signings are blowing up in their faces before the extensions even start. So
feel very bad for them.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm. My heart breaks. It simply breaks.
And the other thing is the Yankees' schedule, other than playing the Blue Jays, is incredibly easy. That's pretty much it. Because they just have, they play the next 12 games are against the Braves, Red Sox, Rays, and Orioles.
You just hope that they don't do what they did against the
rabble,
Indians.
Rabble, they can't beat bad teams, rabble.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently it's just the Indians they can't beat, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I mean, the Indians do have very good pitching, but at the same time, the Yankees should have been able to do a better job against those lineups in the world.
Yeah. And they finished the season against, like, the White Sox, the Red Sox, and the Orioles. Mm-hmm. Which, it's really just those, like, 7 games against the Blue Jays that are really, like, the hardest games. But the rest of the season is pretty much they're playing, like, mediocre teams.
Yeah, they really just need to take care of business, really, because, I mean, even if the Blue Jays continue their really great run, the Yankees are still a few games ahead of the wild card pace, so they will at least be in that wild card playoff game, and while that would be really frustrating to see the entire season go down to that one game, at least it's better than what was going on in 2013 and 2014, when the season was basically over by the beginning of September.
Yeah.
But doom! So much doom.
Considering they were really only projected to be like a 500 team.
At least with this year, we didn't have to watch Luis Cruz get at bats in August.
Oh my god. Luis Cruz. A real thing. I think what's made this actually feel worse, the Yankees fans, is just because they were so good in July. That was their best month of the season. They were 17-7. And they were playing out of their minds, and they scored... They had those several games where they scored like 20 runs and then 10 a couple more times, and it was just like, wow, this offense is like can't be stopped, and then all of a sudden the offense stopped. A little awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the whole about face thing, you know.
Yeah, I think I wrote an article like in July, and I was like, oh yeah, the offense is great, but it's probably not going to be this great in the second half, and people were like, no, that's impossible.
I'm really hopeful that so the Yankees had the day off on Thursday, and now they're playing 3 games in Atlanta, and A-Rod won't be starting any of those games, so maybe it'll be a time for him to sort of refresh, kind of like earlier in the season when they played a little bit in Miami, I think, and A-Rod didn't play.
Yeah, that's what I was about to bring up.
And then he got hot again. So maybe that's all A-Rod needs. And he is like a 40-year-old playing the most games in a season. He's played this since 2010, so...
True.
Although it is hard to look at the Yankees lineup without A-Rod. Even when A-Rod is slumping, there's still the threat of A-Rod that, like, pitchers will still be very careful with him, and he can still crush a mistake out. But it hasn't been a lot of fun watching him basically since he turned 40.
Pretty much. But he's old, so it's kind of to be expected. Even if he sucks the rest of the season, it's still a pretty great season.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt.
Yeah. He could, like, not get another hit for the rest of the season when still far outpaced what I thought he was going to do.
And I'm really glad that he's doing this now, as opposed to the beginning of the season, because otherwise there would be so much booing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when I was at Yankee Stadium on Andy Pettit Day, he didn't start that day. He pinch hit, and then when the stadium announced him, the place went nuts. And, like, I was just like, I can't believe this is happening, and it's amazing.
Yeah, the few games I went to early in the season, like, people went crazy. People really loved watching him play, which was in such stark contrast. So I guess people now won't be as hard on him, but, like, I'm going to say it's going to turn pretty soon.
It might turn breeze. Soon. Especially if, like, it's, like, late-game situations, and he ends up in a situation where he's up with runners in scoring position, and he pops it up. Even if he got, like, a big hit the day before, they'd be like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible, but I'm still proud of Yankees fans for not turning on him already.
Yeah, it's better than what I've expected, so hopefully they'll keep it up. And hopefully A-Rod just starts hitting again and alleviates all concerns.
And, like, I know, like, all the pessimists out there, like, their response to this whole discussion will be, well, yeah, the Yankees have still let a 7.5-game lead slip, but I don't know. Like, they won 5 World Series by that time. I was 18.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Plus a 7.5-game lead in, like, July is not... I mean, it's not nothing, but it's not like, oh my god, this huge lead.
Yeah, and also the thing is, like, the Blue Jays ad hit, like, a ridiculous amount of good players in a very short period of time, and they also happen to be on a hot streak at the same time, so, like, I'm not totally shocked. And the thing is, like, that was the Blue Jays took a completely different approach. Like, they took the approach of, we need to win right now. Or, and, like, Yankee fans sort of see that as, like, oh, why don't the Yankees feel like that? And it's because they've won a lot, and they shouldn't have to sacrifice their future just for this one playoff berth. Like, they don't need it as much as the Blue Jays need it.
Nope.
So, I'm not too upset. If the Blue Jays win a division, like, good for them. Like, they have suffered for much longer.
And, I mean, a lot of the Yankee team will be back next year with, hopefully, like, some additions, like, seeing Bird and Severino and additions in two parts. Like, well, who knows, maybe they do have a sniper chance or whatever, but like the Blue Jays are obviously going to lose price, but the Yankees aren't really going to lose that much, and they have a chance to be good again next year.
Yeah, on July 28th the Blue Jays were a game under 500, and since then they've gone 21-4.
Yep.
Like,
I think if a team ever
does that, no one's going to sustain that pace.
And I think two of those, the Yankees were the ones who beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they took 2 out of 3, and actually, I guess that record is now 21-5 to reflect their loss, the Blue Jays lost to the Rangers on Thursday. But still, like, they lost a game. They lost a one-run game to the Royals on August 1st. They lost a one-run game to the Yankees on August 14th. Then they lost 4-1 when Tanaka threw the complete game, I believe, on August 15th. Then they lost a 3-run game to the Phillies, which, lol, baseball. And then today, when they lost, I think it was only a few-run game to the Rangers. So even, like, the losses, they've been really close. They haven't gotten blown out in quite some time.
Yeah. But you said they went 21-4 or whatever it was?
Yeah, well, 21-5 now, but basically, yeah, 21-4.
Okay, well, that's 136 win pace.
Yeah. So, I mean, when any team does that.
I don't know if that's sustainable.
Yeah, and if it does end up being sustainable, then Jesus, hats off to you, because that just doesn't happen. Like, not even, like, I would be surprised if even the 98 Yankees had, like, a pace at one point like that. Maybe they did, but that is ridiculously good.
They do sustain that. Is there any move the Yankees could have made to keep up with that? So I'm not sure there is.
And, like, I think Matt Provenzano touched on this before, but, like, the thing that, like, boggles my mind about this, like, the people that are thumping on, like, oh, Yuki should have done something. Well, like, you know, they added Luis Severino to their rotation. They probably would not have gotten a David Price or a Ben Zobrist without Luis Severino. So even if you're adding one of those in, you're taking Severino out of the equation, who has been pretty good. So even though, like, you're swapping, like, a Price for a Severino or maybe Zobrist production at second base over Drew, that's still leaving a hole where Severino was that would probably be getting filled by kind of crap. I guess Brian Mitchell, CeCe Sabathia. Like, not that I even think Brian Mitchell's crap, but, like, that's not the same thing as, like, what Luis Severino is offering. So it's not, like, a direct substitution. And it just, I don't understand why people don't think of that.
And even if the thing is, let's say they did make that move and the team slumped still, they'd still be behind the Blue Jays by the end of the game. So, like, this, you're talking about a difference of, like, rounding error, essentially.
And people would be torching them for giving up on those prospects.
Oh yeah, if they gave up on Severino and still lost the division, I think Cashman would probably lose his job.
Mm-hmm. Like, right, that's because there would at least be a discussion.
So. Yeah, exactly. Like, giving up, like, blue chip prospects, like, for a failed venture is, like, pretty bad.
And maybe it's just because, like, unlike some fans have taken on the season as, like, oh, well, you're actually getting great production out to Sharon A-Rod. You have to go for it. Just go all in. But at the same time, like, I'm still considering, like, we entered 2015. We were expecting maybe the Yankees could contend for a wild card, and if things broke right, maybe they could get to the division title. We didn't think that they would play this well. So, like, I don't feel like that shouldn't make you abandon the original plan entirely. Because, I mean, obviously you don't want to hug the prospects too much. But at the same time, you're never going to get any young players into the organization if you never give them a chance. So when else would it happen if you're trading these prospects now? I mean, then you're gambling. Then you're just gambling on the future off seasons to come up with your Didi Gregoriuses of the world.
Exactly, and the thing is, like, the only real difference in between how they are projected now and how they are projected due to being in the season is basically the difference of DeSher and A-Rod, and maybe you could add Beltran doing well recently. So if you tally those together, which people expected pretty much nothing from them, this isn't really much of a different team than when the season started. So, like, how is your plan vastly different now than when it was to be in the season, when really this is, like, the same team? Like, there weren't that many, like, big surprises, really, other than those three, or I guess you could say partially Beltran. There weren't other, like, big surprises elsewhere. Everything else came kind of pretty much as we expected.
Mm-hmm. Like, McCann had the rebound we expected. So
And if nothing changes and the Yankees finishes the wild card, if you think about it, at the end of the season, if you'd said, well, the Yankees going to be the wild card, and not only that, but we're going to get productions that A-Rod to share, and then we're going to get Severino come up, and he'd be productive. Like, who wouldn't have taken that?
Right? Especially when, like, some people were saying maybe I remember there were some people that were saying maybe the Yankees are the worst team in the division. Or fourth place. They consider them behind the Red Sox, which is funny. And behind where the Orioles were, because they had just won the division. And Toronto was even getting talked up before they made all these moves. Tampa, I think people was getting the most last place votes, but even some people were like, well, you know, they could still come out and surprise because Tampa will do that with that pitching staff. But the Yankees have had a great season, like, for where people thought they would be. I mean,
and their farm system too. Like, now you see they're climbing up the organizational list, and the most recent list had, like, four Yankees in the top 25 prospects. So. Things are looking up there, too, so it's not like they're sacrificing their success in the major league level for the minor league level. Like, both of them are going in the positive direction.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, people are being pessimistic because they played well early. Like, that's crazy when you actually, like, think about it like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's like they're angry that the team that was only supposed to win 80 wins is now possibly going to win 86 instead of, like, 90.
Oh no. And I feel like they haven't had, like, a perfect season, obviously. Like, I think Sabathia was in the rotation longer than we would have liked, and now he's hurt because I guess he decided to stop trying to cover for his knee and pitch a little bit better, but then got hurt. But at the same time, like, maybe Warren would have kept it up if he was in the rotation. I guess we don't know. We would have liked to have known, but it's in the past now, so.
And he's been pretty good in the bullpen, and honestly, the bullpen kind of needs that, too. Because if he wasn't there, it would just be the lower rung would fill his position. And he takes some innings away from guys like Shreve.
Yeah.
In the middle of relief. Like, he's a good bridge to the Wilson, Shreve, and Betances Miller.
Mm-hmm. He's been good at keeping some of those games that were, like, kind of within reach close. And giving the offense a chance. Because as this offense has shown, unlike the 2013 and 2014 Yankees, they can come back.
Yeah.
Like that 20-run game they had. They were down like 5-0 in the first inning because Capuano exploded on the mound. And then they scored 21 unanswered runs.
Yeah, so...
Which was the team at its hottest, but still.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is the team at its coldest, so I feel like they could go somewhere in the middle.
And, like, games like that Friday night one in Toronto with the Beltran homer, like, that wouldn't have happened last year.
Nope. Probably not.
Like, this is a good team. They just won their games at the wrong time, and now they're making people upset.
Can't have any cold stretches ever. Ever.
And, I mean, by WRC+, they're still the fifth best team in baseball. I mean, the only teams that are better are, like, the Giants, Tigers, Dodgers, and obviously Blue Jays. But other than that, every team, just imagine how much, you know how much they complain, like, in 2013. And, like, pretty much every team is doing worse than them offensively.
Whereas, like, those years, it was like, the Yankees were, they've already passed their home run total from those years. They passed the home run total at the beginning of the month, I think.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. I think it was the last time we did the podcast, they were like a home run off.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, have them in a great August, but just give them a little bit more time. Maybe they are slowing down, but just wait a little bit more time for them to see if they actually are. And maybe the off day will help them.
No, maybe playing the Braves will help them.
Yeah, that would also be nice.
Like the Astros are good and the Indians have good pitching. Like maybe they just ran into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both the Indians and the Astros have great pitching. Great pitching will do that to offenses sometimes. Even when like Scott Feldman occasionally throws up his gem. Yeah, that'll happen. But nah, they should throw in the towel. I've heard that the season ended a couple times. Maybe they need Luis Severino to hit a home run in Atlanta.
I wouldn't turn that down.
Nope. I don't think Tanya would either, since Tanya will be there. So Greg Bird.
Greg Bird. The word. Kinda.
Greg Bird?
He's been okay. I mean, he had that one amazing game.
Oh, man. That was a lot of fun. The two homer game, and then he's like kind of sheepishly taking a curtain call, you know.
Other than that, he's been, you know, like typical adjustment period for someone who's just been called up.
Totally fine.
And the one thing that's kind of interesting is I still haven't been able to peg his defense yet, because you still have some people like the Keith Laws calling his defense dreadful, and then you have like the beat writers for Scranton who are like, no, it's been pretty good. So I don't think we've seen enough of them to determine whether the defense is bad, but bad seems...
I don't think his defense would be dreadful, even. I think at worst it's maybe below average, but I think he's okay.
Yeah.
Like, he's made some nice picks at first base, and some of the throws to second... Some of the throws to second have been good, some of them haven't been as good. But he's had great instincts. Like, there was the one play where he saw the runner was breaking toward third and he threw... I think to either second or third to like get the runner out in the middle of the play. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did see that.
I didn't just imagine it, I promise.
No, I did see that. Yeah, so there's certain things like that where it's good. The one thing I did notice while he was hitting is that his ability to hit the fastball is pretty bad at the moment.
Yeah, he's still working on that. And it does seem like the Yes Booth was talking about this, so I guess we can't exactly call this original, but like they were a lot of the pitchers were throwing the high fastballs to like beat him up, and he's been swinging over them. And, you know, he did have some strikeout tendencies in the minors, so those will crop up, and he did just start his career, so. Anxious.
Yeah, that's gonna be the one. I'm just hoping that that's more of a bug and not just, oh, his bat speed is definitely not good enough to hit a fastball. Yeah. That would be suboptimal.
Yeah, probably just some like results of him only being in the majors for 12 games now. So
yeah, that's why I can't really make any judgments. But that was just one thing I noticed.
Yeah, and I think it's good that he's getting big league experience, because he really had nothing left to prove in Scranton, and even if he's just in, like, a part-time role right now, obviously the fact that Teixeira is out has given him a bit more exposure, but even in a part-time role, it's good to have him around, because, like, a lot of major leaguers don't start off, like, getting handed the starting job unless you're, like, a Carlos Correa, or you walk into the right situation like Jose Altuve did a few years ago, so... He's getting his reps. Getting his great swings in.
Yep.
And I think it's a good trial period, because Teixeira still has a decent amount of time left in his contract, so at least enough time for him to try out for the spot.
Yep. And Severino has continued to pitch really, really well.
Yeah. I've been incredibly impressed.
Like,
I mean, he is a future reliever, so we can't get too excited.
That's true, yeah. Apparently that's law. Ha. Ha.
Womp. Womp.
Well. No, but he's looked pretty tremendous. And, yeah, like, I can't really complain too much about, like, a 2.74 ERA through four starts. I mean, and you can slowly see him improving, too. Like, his first couple starts, he was throwing a ton of pitches and not really being very economical, but in the past couple, he's been better. Now, obviously, we're still working with a small sample size, but it's really exciting to see, like, this guy come up who's only 21 years old, and he's already, like, learning from what he was doing wrong before. His third major league start, he struck out 9 people. And that was against the Blue Jays. Had a really great lineup.
Yeah, and him being 21 is just scary, because... Even if things don't click, I mean, a lot of these pitchers, like, their progression is so nonlinear that it could take a while for them to completely figure it out. But the stuff is, like, there. It's just a matter of harnessing it.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's here already is remarkable. Like, so I did that post for Thursday, like, sort of providing an update on where all the Yankees international, or most of the Yankees international signees from last year, the big international spending pool. How they've been doing the past year. Luis Severino was just in the Dominican Summer League in 2012, and he was in the Gulf Coast League in July of 2013. And now he's here, and it's just 2 years later, and just 3 years after the Dominican Summer League, which is, like, forever.
Yeah, he went up in, like, a matter of minutes. Like, he went from, like, low A to, like, triple A in, like, a year.
I think my favorite is still that, like, he only made 5 starts in Tampa, and they're like, yeah, we're good. Go to Trend. We've seen enough. You're done with A-ball. And, like, that's so unlike the Yankees, too, because they tend to be, maybe it's just confirmation bias, but they tend to be more conservative with when they want to promote people. And, like, that's fine. That's every organization has a different philosophy. But, like, you don't normally see players move up as quickly as Severino did, but he was just that talented.
I think there are some cases, but in many cases, just because their players have been so bad. All their farm players have been so terrible.
Yeah.
That's true.
That it's like, of course they're conservative. They're not good.
Yeah, so he's been a lot of fun. It's been great to see Eovaldi really find himself over the past few months. Basically, since that one blow-up start against the Marlins, he's been tremendous. He looks like a different pitcher.
Yeah, he made adjustments. That was the key. And I think everyone knew that that was what it was going to be. It was going to be the development of the splitter and him, like, honing his location, which he's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously this is, like, kind of being selective about when we're choosing a range, but since that blow-up start in Miami, he has a 2.93 ERA in 12 starts. And he is not allowed more than... He's allowed more than 3 runs in just one of them.
Nice.
Yep. 584 OPS against, which shows you like how difficult it has been to hit him, because 584 OPS is not good. 584 OPS is worse than Brendan Ryan. Yep.
584 is like what they got at third base in 2013.
Pretty much, yeah. Stewartian.
Basically, since that Marlins start, people are hitting Alberto Gonzalez off him.
Speaking of Alberto Gonzalez, we did get to see some valued relief innings from Brendan Ryan.
I shut the game off before that happened.
I can't believe...
I saw it coming in, so I turned it on for 10 minutes.
I can't believe Brendan Ryan pitched 2 innings in a game. Like, it's funny enough that Brendan Ryan pitched, but the fact that he pitched 2 innings and didn't allow a run. It's too bad that he had just shaved his mustache, like, the day before.
Yeah, I really could care less if they get rid of him at any point, but he is a great comedy character to have around.
Just like, oh, I guess Brendan Ryan's pitching now.
He
accumulated 0.1 WAR.
His videos that they have at Yankee Stadium where he's on those like main videos are hilarious. Hilarious. He's always the funniest one when they have those team videos in the middle, in between innings. It was like, they had this one thing where it was like, who's the smartest player on the team? And they asked each player who they thought the smartest player was. And he's like, well, I'm only going to talk about the second smartest.
When they did one, it was like, who would be the best in the TV booth after they retired? Like, most of them said Brendan Ryan. Some of them said Teixeira, which I guess makes sense, because Teixeira does seem to be bland enough for TV.
I think Brendan Ryan will have a good TV career, in my opinion.
Probably.
I think Teixeira would be, like, great in, like, the Yes booth after Rick, like, Cohn. Like, Paul O'Neill. Like, that kind of...
Yeah.
I could see that being entertaining.
I could see Brendan Ryan working in that, too. Actually, he might have too much personality for that. I don't know. No, but I could I could definitely see Teixeira telling the bad jokes in the booth that people are like, aha. I go, you said it, Michael. If that happened, then we would need a mandatory foul territory return just so that we could see his training.
I'm always for more foul territory.
Yes, it truly is a travesty that it never happened this year. What I thought was weird is that, like, he said that one of the reasons he did it last year is because they had so many new people. But there were several new people here this year, too. Could have talked to Andrew Miller. Could have talked to Didi Gregorius. # Birdman. Or Bird Machine, that was it, right?
Bird Machine.
Didi Gregorius is just a treasure for his tweets.
I love that so much. But like, speaking of those like mid inning videos where they talk to players,
yeah,
like Scranton does them, and I was at a game this year where Kyle Davies is on the stream. They asked him what his favorite movie was, and he said he didn't have a favorite movie, but he liked movies.
Such a weird answer.
Who said this?
Kyle Davies.
Kyle Davies.
I don't have a favorite movie, but I have movies that I like.
Yeah, he just likes all movies.
It's like that that terrible article that was written about Derek Jeter. Where it's like, what's Derek Jeter's favorite 5 movies?
Yeah.
This one's pretty good. Well, that's pretty good. I think it's still my favorite thing ever written about Jeter, just because it was just like, what? Why, who considered this good?
Well, Gia Rip growing people today was pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, that's I can't believe that happened either. It's like, here's my Twitter account, and then he's Rickrolling. It's like, oh, did Derek Jeter just catch on to that?
I think I saw the account post that it was Rickroll, and I didn't actually think that it meant like he actually Rickrolled. I just thought like, oh, he was just trolling people. I was like, oh, what is that? And then I clicked on it. I was like, no, they were serious. Like, he actually was Rickrolling people.
And then I was saying on Twitter, like, afterward, like, do you think that, like, he's just going to be getting into, like, the You're the Man Now Dog sites with YTMND? Or he's going to be, like, talking like Borat?
I mean, that's the thing, is I don't even know if, like, I just seem easily just not even care that it's a 10-year-old joke. I'm just, like, doing it because it's dumb and funny. It should be not even be like he's behind the times. It just be like, yeah, this is stupid. I'm gonna do it.
No, I think it's because Derek Jeter like didn't participate in culture for like his career. I feel like he just was the Yankee for like 20 years, and now he just has nothing to do, so he's just like watching YouTube videos. He all of the questions he was like, he was talking about video games. He's like, yeah, I only play video games from like the 90s, and he's only posting like Rickrolls and stuff. I feel like now he's just catching up on the culture he missed.
By 2020, he'll be making his a hot dog a sandwich jokes.
Exactly. Like, they'll do another, like, Players Tribune interview. It's like, what is your favorite sandwich, Derek Jeter? A hot dog.
Like, he had an opinion of, Biggie versus Tupac, but he had no opinion of Meek Mill versus Drake.
It's like, I don't care. Thank you for asking this question. I did like the Craig Calcaterra post, like, after that. It's like, maybe Derek Jeter isn't, like, a media savant, and maybe he's just really that boring.
It's totally possible. Like, that documentary on HBO. He looked so boring on that.
Yeah. No, but, like, in the photo for this Players Tribune article that went up today, like, the main shot is Jeter at the computer. What do you think is on his computer?
You know what I feel like? It's probably just the default Apple background.
Yeah.
Startup screen. All right, we just need to pose here, Derek.
Like, he just never changed the background, and it's just there's nothing in his documents. He just goes on to check the web.
It's not even his computer. They borrowed it from, like, the community college library or something like that. It's either that or, like, Icon has cheeseburger images.
Yeah, that. It's like a 12-year-old's desktop background. He does.
He's on Newgrounds.com.
Oh my god.
Or at Homestar Runner. That's definitely the face of someone who's watching Teen Girl Squad.
Yeah, or E-Bombs World.
I'd really love it if Derek Jeter is actually like behind one of like the weird Twitter accounts.
Derek Jeter's drill.
Yeah,
Derek Jeter learns about horsey books.
Derek Jeter's I hate bot specs. Oh man.
Turns out Derek Jeter was running the Gay Hooters account all alone.
Ah, I knew it. Derek Jeter died with Starbies. Because one time he just had a bad experience with Arby's, so he just channels it every time. So, another thing that happened over the past few weeks, so we touched on this briefly before, but I was at Andy Pettit Day. There's also Jorge Posada Day. So, we're talking about them a little bit. Maybe, I mean, we don't really need to talk about them too much, because I think everyone listening to this podcast has some decent knowledge of who Jorge Posada and Andy Pettit are. Isn't that right?
No, I know who those people are.
I think Andy Pettit is an insurance salesman, and Jorge Posada is a...
real estate agent.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Yes.
No, but their days seemed pretty fun. It was really cool to see like all those old Yankee dudes from the 90s back at the stadium again, plus Hideki Matsui, who always shows up, like, with, like, the nicest clothes, even, like, better than Jeter. He, like, doesn't go anywhere without a suit. It's kind of amazing.
And everybody just loves him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Hideki Matsui hit that home run against Pedro in Game 6, and he just, like, cashed his ticket to a lifetime of love.
Yep. I mean, people would have liked him anyway, but, like, that just cemented it.
It's just because, like, his first and last game in Yankee Stadium was amazing. Like, that's what's so ridiculous about him. Like, when I think of him, I just think of his first game and his last game, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And dingers. Lots of dingers.
Oh, yeah, and then I think, what was the other thing? Like, he, like, remember when he hurt his wrist and he apologized?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the one time when he showed up to spring training with, like, a picture of his wife, like, sketched. He's like, by the way, I got married over the offseason. This is a picture of her. And as I recall, I might be making this up, but I think, like, he and Jeter and maybe, like, Johnny Damon, when Johnny Damon was, like, between marriages or something, and they had, like, a bet about, like, who would get married next, and then, like, he just trolled them both, and they're like, oh, by the way, I was engaged already, this is my picture of my wife.
Oh my god.
But anyway, getting sidetracked, that's always cool. But, Posada and Pettit, what would you say your favorite memories of each of them were?
I don't know if it's my favorite, but, like, for some reason, the Andy Pettit memory that sticks out to me is just, like, very last start, where he, like, pitched, like, it was in Houston. Mm-hmm. A meaningless game, but he pitched like 8 innings, like, shutting down from a crappy Astros team. But, like, I don't know, something that stands out is, like, final start, and he's still just, like, absolutely falling.
Yeah, it's cool. And he, like, threw a complete game in his last start, and he hadn't thrown a complete game in, like, 7 years or something crazy like that.
It was a complete game?
Yeah, it was a complete game.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, okay.
And then, like...
But other than that, obviously, yeah. Like, Game 6 and 09.
Mm-hmm. Or Game 4, or Game 5 in 1996 World Series when he went
8-3
against John Smoltz. That'll probably be number one for most people.
Lots of playoff wins, Jesse had lots of them.
Yes. He had a few here and there. I like that he was also like an ALCS MVP in 2001, and that's just like, oh, it's just another thing that happened. Like, for a lot of players, that would be a career highlight, but for him, it's just like, oh, yeah, by the way, he just had that in there, you know? A couple of, like, brilliant starts against a 116-win Mariners team, but that's just along the way.
It's not even, like, the first playoff, the, like, number one playoff performance people remember about him.
No. Like, I think people remember the 96 one, then they'll remember 2009 finishing up the Phillies. And,
you remember, like, 2003.
Yeah, he's solid in that World Series. He almost threw a complete game there. And in 98, he had a great start in the World Series against the Padres. And in 2000, against the Mets, he was pretty good in both of his starts.
He was good in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He was really good in the playoffs. Yeah.
Except for that one start against the Diamondbacks when he was tipping his pitches and he got slaughtered. That was not great. But other than that, and this first start in the 96 World Series, when the Braves, like, pulverized him.
Andy Pettit, for me, just was more of an abstract figure. I mean, because his best years, I was, like, a child. I don't remember him pitching from 96 to 2002 or so, because I was, like, in diapers. So, all of that stuff is, like, highlight reels. Like, I just watched the Yankeeography, so I knew about it, but I never really actually watched them that much. So, I remember 2003 a little bit, and I guess the best memories are probably 2009, 2013. Like, that's probably... Game 6, 2009 was probably my favorite moment. Mm-hmm. Just as a Yankee fan, because I didn't watch... I knew that the 2000 World Series had happened, but I was, like, 6 years old. So, it really wasn't that. While Jorge was a little bit different, like, I pretty much my entire childhood was watching him, so.
But one other thing with Andy Pettit, before we go to Posada, like, I'll always remember, too, when he like, in spring training of 2012, like, all of a sudden, like, Jack Kerr tweets, Andy Pettit's coming back. It's like, wait, what? He's unretiring and signing for, like, $2 million, and he's coming back? No, really. But he was coming back, and he was really good that year. Like, yeah. Granted, it was only 12 starts because he, like, broke his leg on, like, a line drive that, like, went back to the
ground. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he was out for a couple months. But he came back, and he, like, didn't miss a beat. And he was fine in the playoffs again. That was really fun. Andy Pettit just doing Andy Pettit things. But you're right, Posada was a bit... I mean, the one thing about Pettit was that, you know, he did leave to go to the Astros for a few years, and then he had the retirement briefly. But Posada was there, like, the entire time for his full career. And so for, like, a full decade there, it was just like, oh, Posada's a catcher. He's always there. And we always knew that he was, like, not really that good of a catcher, but he hit so well that it was just like, yeah, okay. And the easy memory for me is always just that the bloop double against Pedro Martinez.
Oh, yeah, that's the best moment of his career.
In the LCS, yeah. That's got to be it for Posada.
Yeah,
that
celebration.
Was my favorite moment. Yeah, it was great. I was like, I'm trying to, how old was I? I was like 9 years old or something. I don't know, how old was I? Yeah, I was 9 years old, and my parents actually told me to go to bed. And this was like right before this happened. My parents were just like, it's Pedro, just go to bed. And I was like, all right, fine. And then my parents just started screaming. And they ran into my room. They were just like, get up. Like, just hurry, Posada to double. Just get up. Don't ask any questions. And I get up, and then I watch the rest of the game, and, like, I saw the highlight of him hitting a double, but, like, I didn't actually see the exact moment. And then the end of the game was over. My parents were like, all right, you got to go back to bed now. I was like, okay, I guess so. And then I missed, and then I saw the very end of the game with Aaron Boone. But, like, that's the one moment that I remember was just him hitting that double, and my parents was, like, screaming and woke me up.
I'll tell my story, because I watched that game with my mom and correctly predicted Aaron Boone would do something in that game. She will vouch for me.
Nailed it.
But a random Posada memory is, like, there's a game in his last season where they played in the trap where he absolutely murdered a baseball.
I'm sure that probably
went
happened.
Like dead straight away center field off whatever the hell's in center field there. Whatever weird stretcher is behind, like.
I mean, that does sound like something that he would do against one of those terrible Devil Rays pitchers. There is one game that also stands out to me. Is when the Yankees were playing the Rangers, and I think they came back from down like 8 runs or 9 runs, and one of the runs that was not scored by the Rangers, Teixeira actually bowled Posada over, trying to score on a play, but Posada held on to the ball, so that was cool. And then later in the game, Posada hit the walk-off home run. That was pretty neat. He was good at the home runs.
Yeah. He was really good at hitting home runs. Mm-hmm. For a catcher.
Oh, yeah. And, like, switch hitting, too. Like, it was almost unfair having, like, both him and Bernie Williams in, like, the lineup at the same time when... I guess there were only a few years there when they were both still really good, because Bernie was sort of on the downswing when Posada started to become an all-star. But, like, they did have a few overlapping years, and, like, just having both those switch hitters in the lineup was so nice to have that.
Yeah.
Because, like, they both had 30 homer power. I think there was one game when they actually both hit home runs from both sides of the plate in the same game. I think that happened.
Yeah, that really easily could have happened.
Mm-hmm. Like, he hit 275 home runs as a catcher. And filling in this position that's just really hard to slot, just as, you know, as the Yankees found in 2013 when, they had Chris Stewart catching most of their games. Then he had to go out and sign Brian McCann to a big contract just to cover the position. And they were able to get it for like, basically for the entire decade of the 2000s, they filled it from within with a 24th round pick from 1990.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yep. Decent. Decent. That last year was a little weird when, like, you know, he was DHing but wanted to catch, but he was really, really bad. And then there's the one game when he, like, was batting ninth and he's like, I refuse.
Yeah, that was... Yeah. I kind of lost a little bit of respect for him at that point.
Yeah.
He might have Ritwani pecked.
Like, imagine if A-Rod did that. Like, if he started playing bad now, because he's the same age as he was at that point, imagine if he said something like that, like, he would be killed.
Nope, I'm not going to DH, and I'm not going to bat nine.
Like, imagine if he's like, no, I want to play third. And he's, like, playing terribly. Like, people would despise him, like Posada would say. And no. People are like, yeah, you know, he has a point.
No, Aaron wants to play short.
No. You remember, like, earlier in the season he was working with Gregorius? No, he was just, like, taunting him. He's like, no, this is how you play short. Hey, Gerard, are you watching? This is how you play short. Wink, wink. No, Alex, I'm not starting good shortstop. I do wish that heel rod did actually happen in some alternate dimension. Like, the Yankees announce their opening day lineups, and he just runs out to shortstop at the same time as Didi Gregorius, and he's just, like, standing there. Like, I'll wait for you to get off the field, Didi.
He takes batting practice in a number two jersey.
Well, I still always thought, like, he should just, like, run out to the middle field, like, rip a picture of Derek Jeter, like, Sinead O'Connor ripped a picture of the Pope on the Saturday Night Live.
Like the real enemy.
Yeah. Yeah, Rod. He, like, hacks the Yankee Stadium scoreboard to, like, only display the Deadspin story about Jeter and the gift baskets and Yeggies. You can't fix this. What did you do, A-Rod? Oh, well. All right. So, yeah, we bounced around.
Yeah, we've talked a lot of stuff.
Yep. Well, we can jump over the tweet bag. There's not too much. All right, we'll answer the one real question first before we get to what's on the site, because it's nothing. All right, so yep. John B. on Twitter, at iPhone1X, asked, in a one-game playoff, who does Joe send to the mound, Tanaka or Nate?
Tanaka.
Yeah, I think it's gotta be Tanaka.
It's gotta be Tanaka. Just,
yeah.
He is still the Yankees' best pitcher, in my opinion.
Yeah, even as Evaldi's hot right now, and eventually he'll probably cool down a little bit. And Tanaka's the guy... he's the guy you're paying to be your ace. Two, he just showed a couple, like, a week ago in that complete game against the Blue Jays what he can still do when he's on. And I think, like, that's what he kind of lives for. That's one of the reasons why he was so highly regarded in Japan. And, like, in that, like, last playoff series when his team won the Japan series, like, he pitched twice in the series and then made a relief appearance in the last game, I think. So
didn't he throw in his last start a ridiculous amount of pitches?
Oh, probably. Yeah.
He threw a complete game in game six, and he threw 150 pitches, and then he threw relief in game seven.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Like that, the tape on those games are ridiculous. Watching him play, it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and he's been pretty solid for most of the season. Like, 3.61 ERA, that's the best on the staff. Yeah, obviously, Evaldi's done better recently, but that's, you can't ignore the entire season. Tanaka's still pretty solid. So, yep, gotta be Tanaka. Anyone gonna stop the tide this year, Paul? I'm hang up and listen.
Also, who is this joker asking college football questions?
Is it? Yeah, I don't know. No one's gonna stop the tide. Roll tide. Alright, KSean90 asks, do you have any questions for us? Yes, I have a question.
I have a question for KSean.
How dare you? You ask us the questions. Also, I know, actually, I do have a question for you.
My question for him is, why doesn't he have a Twitter account?
Yeah, why are you not on Twitter? We need to be actually be able to credit you. That
was my question, too.
So, your questions are, how dare you, and get on Twitter. So, those are your questions, Keshaw. Harlan wants to know, do you think Rob Ruff Snyder has a dog named Rob Ruff Snyder?
That would be great.
He better.
My answer is yes, and then his dog probably hangs out with Tetsu's dog, Bark Teixeira.
Oh, probably. That is terrible. And a longtime listener wants to know, are the Blue Jays and Mets peak two Sooners? I mean, it's certainly possible, because we've seen teams get hot in August and then kind of cool down in September before.
I feel like it'd be more likely with the Mets than the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I do think that the Blue Jays have, like, the type of team that they can keep it rolling. I don't think that they're going to play at, like, 8-20 ball the rest of the season, but I think they'll be pretty good in September, too. The Mets, though, I don't know, like... I think the Mets are still going to be good enough to win the East because the Nationals are doing nothing. But
yeah, but a lot of their performance is like these weird things, like that I don't think are going to continue.
Isn't Wilmer Flores hitting something ridiculous in August?
Yeah, he's been on a tear since he got fake traded.
Since the cry game.
Yep. I like how that people have used that as the watershed mark of when he's improved. It's like ever since he cried on the field, he's been playing great.
Almost literally the watershed mark.
Corner turned.
He turned the corner when he cried. Since the cry game, which I think was like the 29th or something, he is hitting 329, 361, 570. Wilmer Flores is slugging 570 since the cry game. Okay. But... I mean, I could see the Mets. Actually, I don't know. I need to like bite my tongue before I say I could see the Mets falling in a short series because they have such good pitching. I guess it's true of any team, but like they have the type of pitchers that they can really be terrifying in a short series with like Harvey.
Yeah,
Rob,
but
Syndergaard.
The bullpen is not great.
No, there is that.
Like, they could get used to the seventh inning, but, like, I don't trust Buddy Carlisle with my playoff lead.
And this is still the Mets. Like, they'll stop over your heart. And, like, who would they be playing in a playoff series? I guess the Dodgers in the division series? Because, like, yeah, the Cardinals would play the wild card winner, because the Cardinals are on pace for, like, something ridiculous,
yeah.
Like 102 wins.
Yeah, they would play. Look, I mean, consider those pitching matches would be ridiculous. It would be like DeGrom against Kershaw, and then Harvey against Greinke.
Grabs popcorn.
Naturally, those games would all be like 15-10.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Chokeshaw.
Yeah, Chokeshaw. It's terrible. Or they could end up facing the Giants, and then. You have, like, Bumgarner against DeGrom. I guess the number two wouldn't be as impressive, but still.
Yeah, the Mets would win that is your bullshit.
Yeah. Though the Giants are doing better than they normally do in odd years, so.
That's true.
They're supposed to be in last place. Well, the Rockies have helped them out with that by being horrible.
How are the Diamondbacks only two games under 500? Like, that's way better than I expected.
Because they play the Rockies.
That's true. The Rockies are not a good
and
baseball
the Padres.
Team. The Padres are only a game worse than the Diamondbacks. Ooh. But don't worry, they were going to make a run at it, remember? But, who's the GM? Preller said that's why they held on to like Kimbrel and Upton and all the Zoots. You're going to make a run for it.
So you're saying there's a chance?
So you're saying there's a chance. Hey, they're only, They're only 8.5 games back in the West. Still time. Gonna make a late run at it. The Reds are 29 games
behind the Cardinals. They can replicate the run the Blue Jays went on.
Yeah. right, let's jump ahead to the Yankee and the Mitre of the week. All right, Matt F., who is your Yankee of the week?
God, I don't even know. Evaldi, since he was really good and his start was the sort of one bright spot in the past couple of games.
That's true. He's a pretty safe pick for Yankee of the week here. Matt P., who is your Yankee of the week?
Well, it's Carlos Beltran for still hitting baseballs pretty hard, so I'll take that into September, please.
Yes. God, if he wasn't hitting right now, the Yankees would be just even worse. They've not been hitting very well in August. That can change any time now. And maybe they're just waiting for September to be dramatic about it. God, do you know who the Yankees' second best hitter this week has been?
Steven Drew, isn't it?
Steven Drew.
Yes.
But I'm not making him my Yankee of the week, just on principle.
Oh, come on.
No, hold on. I feel like there's got to be a Yankee pitcher who's done better, maybe. Maybe my expectations are too high. Uh-oh, am I going to end up backing into Steven Drew? is there some? Oh no, Luis Severino is my Yankee of the week. Severino is too good. Sorry, Drew.
Fine.
You get an honorable mention. You get a gold star that Joe Girardi will give you at some point. Also, I'll give an honorable mention Yankee of the week to James Caprillion, who made his Staten Island debut with 3 no hit innings, which I think is decent.
Yes.
Took him long enough to show up in pro ball, but I'll take it.
It was kind of odd it took him that long, actually.
A little bit. Maybe he was, like, he might have just been taking naps. That's all it was. He was, like,
it was a siesta.
Yeah. Okay. Mitre of the week. Bad F.
Brett Gardner. He's just been blah for a couple weeks now.
Yeah. I'm going to go on a limb and say that most of our Patriots and Thuby couldn't be people in the offense.
Probably.
Yeah. Gardner has not been pretty to watch. Matt P., who's your Mitre of the week?
Ugh, it's probably going to be A-Rod, actually.
It's been
so bad. Like, other than that, like, one home run. Like, pretty much nothing. Pretty much been quiet.
I was asking if he's gotten a hit since the A-Rod.
Since Bayrod?
The curse of Bayrod. Yeah,
he's had a home run. He's had a home run since then. I think he's had like 3 hits since then.
Wait, wasn't the Bayrod prompted by the Grand Slam?
Yeah, it was.
So like since then has he had a hit?
Yeah, he has hit since then.
Okay. Still, it's maybe, been, maybe, like, maybe we should be like, on a... Maybe we should be on Curse of Bayrod watch.
Yeah, I think it's something like 3 hits or something.
Alright, well, my Mitre of the week is going to be Chase Headley, because he has not hit very well at all past week. 192, 222, 231. That's, not great.
No.
I almost made it CC, but I almost feel just bad for CC at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. You finally decided that you're just going to pitch, like, you're just going to pitch no holds back, or nothing without holding anything back, and your knee exploded.
It's a dishonorable mention to Ivan Nova.
Yeah, he's noving. Noving all over the place. Okay. So that'll do it for us on the Pinstripe Valley podcast. Hopefully we'll have some more positive Yankees news to discuss next time around. You can follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. You can follow Matt Ferenczyk on Twitter at MattF15. You can follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. Follow Pinstripe Valley at Pinstripe Valley, of course, and PSA GIFs at PSA_GIFs. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. And rate and review us on iTunes appreciate any feedback you have, and don't forget to respond to any tweetback props we put up. So, any last thoughts, Matt P. and Matt F.?
The Yankees should probably win games now. I know it's a groundbreaking analysis, though.
I'll pass on that word.
Pass it on to the big guy upstairs.
Yeah. It's okay, I'm sure Cashman's listening to this. Do you have anything, Matt F.?
Yeah, I got nothing else.
Okay. Keep the eye out for emergency quills if any other blowouts like 15-1 happen again. That's all we can really say.
Always will.
Yep.
That and Arthur.
Oh, yes. The Arthur images. Those have been a welcome addition to the game thread. Alright. So, Matt F., Matt P., Xander Mearns, have a great night. Go Yankees.